Podcasting from the Garden State, welcome to another edition of the New Jersey Legal Update, presented by Stark & Stark, a 100-attorney law firm with offices in Princeton, Cherry Hill, Philadelphia, and New York. The New Jersey Legal Update is a weekly podcast providing the latest information on legal developments impacting those living or doing business in New Jersey.
This is Scott Unger, a member of the Stark & Stark Corporate Litigation Group, New Jersey Legal Update for the week ending December 16, 2005. In this week's podcast, I will discuss oppressed shareholder litigation. To understand this concept, this important aspect of litigation, you must know at least three big things. They are the statutes that govern, or the statute that governs, which is NJSA 14A:12-7, which sets forth the rights of the shareholders in the dissolution. The seminal case of Brenner versus Berkowitz, 134 NJ 488 1993, and Balsamides versus Protein Chemicals, 160 NJ 352. I would recommend that you read those two cases in conjunction with the statute to further instruct yourself as to what I'm going to be focusing on in the next 15 minutes or so. The first issue that we have to discuss is, what is a minority shareholder? A minority shareholder doesn't need to be a minority. It could be a 50-50 situation. It actually could be a situation where the majority is being oppressed by the minority. The key is, what is oppression or unfair conduct? And that's a very factual, fact-specific case. And what the court will look at is what is going on between the shareholders before the court will deem that the company should be broken up, or one shareholder should buy out the other, or other remedies that the court should look at. And the court will look at a variety of things to determine whether or not oppression has occurred. And one of those things could be, for example, not giving access to the books and records to a minority shareholder, bad-mouthing the minority shareholder to the employees, removing the employee, the shareholder, from the corporate offices, removing him as a director, refusing to hire the minority shareholder's relatives. In the Brenner versus Berkowitz case, the termination of a minority shareholder's family members was deemed to be oppression because the other shareholders, their family members were allowed to have their family members work at the company. Taking away powers, taking away compensation, awarding the majority unfair compensation, diluting stock interests, amending the bylaws of the corporation in violation of the shareholder agreements, unfair dividends, no dividends, causing tax problems could be oppression. Increasing in salaries of controlling persons could be oppression. Gross failure to maintain records could be oppression. As I said earlier, not allowing a minority to look at the books and records of the corporation could be oppression. And as a minority shareholder, you have the right to look at the books and records of the company anytime you want. That's codified in the statute itself and in the case law. Failure to notify the minority of corporate meetings. Excluding the minority from business fairs. Physical abuse. There's case law where you have actual fighting between the majority and the minority. A fist fight in the office could trigger oppression. We also see that in the family law context, unfortunately. Verbal abuse, could be a form of oppression. Delay in providing technical information, product samples, or inventory to the minority shareholders, customers could be a form of oppression. Denial of access to the computer system is a form of oppression. Disparaging minority shareholders in front of others could be a form of oppression. Embarrassing the minority shareholder, either with employees or with customers, could be a form of oppression. Declaration of dividends to strip the company of operating funds. Borrowing monies by the majority without consent of the minority. Failure to have the salary of the majority approved by the board of directors. Denial to have counsel at the board of directors meetings could be a form of oppression. Misapplication of supplier discounts. Stealing money from a corporation. Engaging in fraud. Those are all forms of oppression. So what happens if we can show that there is an oppression case? Well, the first thing that we generally do is we go in on what's called an order to show cause. And the seminal case in New Jersey is Crowe versus DeGoya. And in order to get immediate issuance of a preliminary injunction, you must show a few things. The first is irreparable harm. And irreparable harm is harm that money damages couldn't fix. It's immediate irreparable harm. An example would be in the context of a person on a life support machine. If one family member wanted to pull the plug and another family member wanted to stop that from occurring, the family member that didn't want it to occur could go in on an order to show cause and say, Judge, if you allow them to pull the plug, there's irreparable harm because once the plug is pulled, there's no going back. So that's the first thing that must be shown to get a TRO issued. The second thing that must be shown is a possibility of ultimate success in the merits. And what we would do in a case of an oppression claim is set forth with a verified complaint what is going on. Explain to the judge that Joe or Jane is beating the minority shareholder up. They're physically assaulting them. They're denying them access to the books and records. Those kind of things that we can show the judge that we're entitled to this kind of relief because there is, in fact, oppression. And then you invite the court's attention to the seminal cases which I described before, along with the statute 14A12-7, which is key. The third thing you have to show is the harm to the other party versus the harm to the party seeking the issuance of the TRO. Generally speaking, when we go in on a TRO, we can ask for a number of things. We can ask for the court to give the minority shareholder access to the books and records. We can ask for expedited discovery. We could ask that the majority cease and desist from engaging in the types of behaviors that are complained about. We could ask for the court to appoint a receiver or a custodian or a fiscal agent. Obviously, those types of remedies, the receiver, the custodian, or the fiscal agent, they're tougher to get. And when I speak with clients about that, those issues, I always also advise the client that they cause money. If the court's going to appoint a receiver to run the company, the judge will probably appoint a lawyer to run the company or an accountant, and the lawyer or the accountant is going to charge the corporation a significant amount of money to run the corporation. I only recommend the appointment of a receiver or a custodial agent in the most outrageous or egregious type of cases because the costs that comes with that, you have to think about that consideration. Now, what is the possible final resolution of these cases? Well, the first is obviously a dissolution of the corporation or a winding up of its affairs. But more often than not, what we generally see is a buyout. we generally see one side buying the other out. We've seen the minority buying the majority out. We've seen the majority buying the minority out. Or we've seen auctions to third parties. We've seen sales to third parties. We've sometimes seen removal of bad actors. The court, as a court of equity, which we generally file these in the Chancery Division of the New Jersey court system, can use its equitable powers to do a lot of things. And the statute and the case law interpreting them, the Balsamini's decision, Musto, Muhlenberg, they give the court a laundry list of remedies that the court can generally deal with or generally choose. But as I alluded to earlier, what generally happens is a buyout. And that gets to the most important part of the litigation is, how do we value companies? How do we determine what's the fair value? And notice I use the word fair value. Generally speaking, unless there's some other thing or operating agreement in place, the court will determine fair value. Now, fair value is different than fair market value. Fair market value is what a buyer on the market would pay for a share of the stock or that percentage of the shares in the stock. The court, using its equitable powers and the legislature, came up with the idea that buyouts would be determined on a fair value. Now, valuation is not an exact science. These corporations are generally not Bristol-Myers Squibb. They're not traded companies. There's no market for them. You can't go to the Wall Street Journal and look up their value. So what we generally do is we hire experts to do a number of things that determine their value, their fair value. One thing they do is they look at, they can compare them to other corporations, a comparison approach. More likely than not, they look at the assets of the corporation. Does it own a building? Then they get another expert in to value the building by looking at comparisons or determining the value of the building based on an income, which is the third way of evaluating the business, is to the income approach, which the expert will look at the financial records of the company and determine the cash basis of the company, how well it's doing, how much income it's bringing in every year, what are its expenses, what are the shareholders getting. Now, the interesting issue is, what is the date of valuation? Now, the case law says that when you're determining the value of a corporation, there's a presumption that the date of valuation is the date that the complaint is filed, which leads to some interesting thoughts that we discuss with our clients. If the company is going up in value as the year goes on, let's say it's a company that at the end of the year distributes all its cash and at the end of the year loses all its value, or there's a client that could be coming in the next 6 months that could really significantly increase the value of the corporation, or I've seen the opposite, where the partner feels that in the next 6 months a major client may leave the company, or the company may lose them as a client. Those are things that we should consider when we're filing a complaint. Sometimes it's best to run into court quickly. Sometimes it's best not to. So there is a presumption that valuation is the date of the complaint is filed. However, the court, being a court of equity, could say that it's not right, it's not fair, they just got the largest client ever, the value of the company just increased 100,000 times, and it would be inequitable to award damages based on evaluation data as to the date of the complaint is filed. So the court, these are not hard, fast rules because, again, this is a court of equity. Again, let's talk about this concept of fair value. And the court could award some what we call discounts. And the first discount that is sometimes awarded is called a lack of marketability discount. And what that is that because we're dealing with a closely held corporation, and the minority has, let's say, for example, a 30% interest in the business, if you were to put that on the market, of course, well, I talked earlier about the fair value, but if you were to put that on the market, normal people in the market wouldn't want to buy a 30% interest because they're the minority. Again, this isn't a publicly traded company. There isn't a market. You can't trade through your broker this stock. So the court could award a marketability discount, but they generally do so only when it's fair and equitable. And generally, what I've found is that courts don't punish bad actors. If the majority oppresses the minority, then generally speaking, the court will not apply a marketability discount or a minority discount or a key man discount. A key man discount is a discount where you have a corporation where you have one, like for example, you have two brothers that run a company. One brother is a PhD and a scientist, and he really runs the business, and the other brother just kind of got the stock because his brother was very giving to him. If they got into a fight and they got divorced, the court may say that the brother with the PhD, the scientist, he runs the company. The PhD, the science background, is necessary. So therefore, a key man discount should be given. The court could also could make equitable adjustments. I found in my experience that the most important part of dealing with these types of cases is dealing with the business valuation part of the case. Generally speaking, when it comes to litigation, the courts will say that because as I alluded to earlier, there's so many chances to have oppression. There's so much that's out there that could happen over the course of a relationship that the court could deem that the party should be broken up. So the key issue is valuation. Now, the last issue, which I'll talk about very, very briefly, is how it's done in terms of the breakup. The court must consider the corporation when it decides to break up the corporation. And if, let's say, one shareholder is entitled to half the money, if the court determines that by doing so we would bankrupt the company or hurt the corporation and, I guess, in turn hurt the other partner, the staying partner, the court, using its equitable powers, could determine, or I guess they would determine, the terms of the buyout. They could determine that the buyout would occur over a series of years, which obviously could have some tax consequences for both shareholders. So that's a sketch nail of oppression litigation in the state of New Jersey. Obviously, there's a lot to cover. There's a lot more than I discussed today, but because this is a short seminar, I guess, if you have any more questions or you'd like to learn any more about this topic, please feel free to call me at 609-896-9060 or email me at sunger, U-N-G-E-R, like Felix, at stark-stark.com. And make sure you tune in next Friday for another edition of New Jersey Legal Update by the law firm of Stark & Stark. Thank you and have a good week.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's installment of the New Jersey Legal Update by Stark & Stark. And be sure to join us each and every Friday for another insightful discussion. We'd like to hear from you. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information about Stark & Stark and the services we provide, email us at podcast@stark-stark.com.